Helen and Menelaus. The boys stood at the gate, dusty from their travels. A sentry looked and, uncertain, reported to the captain of the guards. The captain of the guards came, looked, and, uncertain, reported to Etioneus, spear carrier to Menelaus through the 10 long years of war at Troy, and now his senior attendant. Etioneus looked, and, uncertain, went to report to the king himself. "Well, that's us fully inspected," said Pisistratus, as he and Telemachus stepped stiffly down from their chariot. "Bring the strangers in! Bring them in!" said Menelaus to Etioneus. "Zeus above! If the queen and I had not been the beneficiaries of hospitality over the years, we would hardly be here to tell of it, would we?" One look at the young pair as they came shyly in convinced Menelaus that these boys were of blood that was, at the very least, noble. Their shyness was apparent, but not so selfish or awkward as to occlude the exhibition of proper manners. "Welcome, my fine young fellows. First we must do something to relieve you of the dust of your travels, and then we can talk." He clapped his hands, and beautiful girls appeared, bowing shyly. Pushing down their instinct to giggle, the boys solemnly followed the girls through to a huge marble bath, where handmaidens of equal, if not surpassing, beauty scraped them and sponged them and rubbed them down with fragrant oil. Arrayed in fresh tunics, they were brought into the great hall, where Menelaus welcomed them with outstretched arms. "Much better. Sit, eat, drink." It was all Telemachus could do not to gawp, pop-eyed, at the luxury of his surroundings. King Nestor's residence and compound at Pylos had been fine enough, but this high-ceilinged palace of ivory, amber, silver, and gold was unlike anything he had ever seen or imagined. His father's royal mansion in Ithaca, of which Telemachus was so proud and fiercely protective, and which all Ithacans called the palace, was but a stable, a cow byre, a sty, next to this glorious, gleaming, golden, and godlike citadel. He whispered as quietly as he could into Pisistratus's ear, "Can you believe all this? I bet Zeus's palace on Olympus isn't half as grand." Menelaus had sharp hearing. "What Zeus has is everlasting, dear boys. This palace and all around it will one day crumble into dust. Mind you, for all that, I'm glad you're impressed. Best part of 10 years and tough dealing to acquire some of these pieces. But when I think back, I'd give up a third of it all to have those dead heroes I fought with standing beside me once again." "A third of it?" Telemachus managed not to smile. "So he wouldn't give it all up to have those heroes at his side once more?" "You will forgive the disorder everywhere," Menelaus said. "We have a double wedding in the house. Our beloved daughter Hermione is promised to Neoptolemus, son of Achilles, for good or ill." That last phrase added in so low a mutter that Telemachus felt rude for having heard it. "Next week," continued Menelaus, "we will pack her off to Phthia, where she will marry and be installed as queen of the Myrmidons. And a month after that, my beloved son Megapenthes is to be wed to Iphiloche, the daughter of my good friend Alector."
"We offer our sincere congratulations, Majesty," said Pisistratus.
"Thank you. You might have noticed that I said our beloved daughter, but my beloved son. After giving birth to Hermione and another son, Nicostratus, my wife Helen, she'll be down presently, has been unable to bear more children. So I got Megapenthes by a slave girl.
The practice is common enough here in Sparta, but I know such things are looked on with disfavour in other kingdoms." Telemachus could not refrain from gulping slightly. Not because the king was being so free with intimate family details, but simply to hear the phrase, "my wife, Helen," in reference to her, to Helen of Troy, or rather, Helen of Sparta, as Telemachus had been taught loyally to say, never mind how the world would always know her. Pisistratus filled the silence. "You fought alongside some of the greatest men in history, sir."
I did, under the scepter of my brother Agamemnon. You know what happened to him?"
The boys nodded gravely.
"Every evening I sit here and I weep for him, and for all the dead. The one I miss most is Odysseus. You've heard of him and his exploits? Believe me, in his case, real life outstrips report and legend. What a man! What a mind!"
He is dead too, then?" Telemachus could only whisper the words.
"No one knows. His fleet was blown off course by a storm 9 or 10 years ago, however long it was that Troy fell, as were our ships. Rumours about him fly, but no one knows. No one knows for sure. I do, however, have a—"
Telemachus brought the end of his cloak up to his eyes and then made a show of patting his brow as if to wipe away sweat. And just like that, Helen was amongst them. This is where years of tuition and training count. To their great credit, the boys refrained from goggling like loons. They stood and executed their bows exquisitely. But inside each, his heart hammered and the blood roared in his ears. To Telemachus, her beauty was like a loud noise, a peal of bells, a bellowing of oxen, a clash of arms. Helen herself, meanwhile, did stare. "But Menelaus," she said, "these young men, have they introduced themselves?"
We were waiting until you had arrived, my love, before going into names and bloodlines."
That was as it should be. The accepted rules of hospitality forbade instant curious inquiry. "Surely you can see, though. I can't be mistaken. I see before me a young Nestor and a young Odysseus. I cannot be wrong." Pisistratus stepped forward, the first to recover. "I have indeed the honour of being a son of Nestor, your majesty. Pisistratus is my name, and this is my friend Telemachus of Ithaca." "Telemachus!" Helen stepped forward to embrace him. Helen of Troy was in his arms and weeping. The wildest dream could not conjure such a scene. Soon they were all talking in as fast and friendly a fashion as friends who had known each other all their lives.
"Never knew a man like your father," Menelaus said to Telemachus. "For brains, of course, everyone knows about his wit and cunning, but his spirit, his courage and strength too. Saw him throw a full-grown pig 10 podes once, not a word of a lie."
"You know what he did," Helen said. "He had himself whipped till his skin was peeling off his body. Then, smeared in dust and dirt, he went to the gates of Troy as a beggar. No one challenged him when he entered. No one knew him. I did, though. I recognized him and smuggled him into my chambers. He told me news of Menelaus. With his words, his kindness, his understanding nature, he unpicked every spell Aphrodite had woven to make me forget Sparta and home. He assured me that I was forgiven. Menelaus took her hand.
"Nothing to forgive, my dear."
Soon the talk was of the 10-year war and its heroes. Was it true that Hector, though Trojan, had a noble and good character? What did Priam look like? Did the gods really appear at the height of battle? Pisistratus asked about the death of his brother Antilochus. "They say he sacrificed himself to save my father from the Ethiopian warrior Memnon."
"One of the bravest things I ever saw," said Menelaus. "But surely Nestor himself told you of it."
Pisistratus shook his head. "He never speaks of Antilochus. The subject gives him pain, and so we never press him."
"Everyone loved that lad. When Memnon slew him, it sent Achilles into one of his rages. He waded through the very heart of the battle, killing and killing. Never seen anything like it. He got his revenge soon enough, too. A spear straight through Memnon's chest. But that didn't cool Achilles' fury. That was the day he fought his way to the very gates of Troy and was shot in the foot, in the heel, by that..."
The name Paris hung in the air, unspoken. Telemachus dared not look at Helen. She seemed unperturbed. "I think, Menelaus, you should tell them everything you know of Odysseus after the war. Telemachus has come a long way for news."
"Of course, of course. But tell me first, how are things at Ithaca? Queen Penelope in good health?"
Telemachus told him about the suitors and their feasting, blaspheming, and abuse of the palace staff, how Antinous and the others were trying to force Penelope to accept that Odysseus would never be seen in the world again. The pressure on her to choose a husband from the pack of animals that was closing in around her. Menelaus and Helen expressed their horror and disgust, their readiness to help, if help they could.
"But first," said Menelaus, signalling for wine to be poured and the servants to withdraw, "I told you that no one knows for sure where your father is, but I do know something. Where shall I begin? Would it bore you if I told you a little of what Helen and I did once we left Troy? It leads to news of Odysseus."
"Bore us? Never, sir."
"Very well, then.